Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up later this hour, Alec Baldwin remembers his TV mom, Elaine Stritch. But first, all this week, we've been hearing from progressive policy advocates taking stock of the de Blasio administration at the six-month mark. Is he being the progressive mayor he campaigned on being? We'll wrap up that series now with the number two man in city government, first deputy mayor Anthony Shouris, who in fact is about to be the acting mayor for the next 9 days or so as the de Blasio family takes their vacation to Italy. Deputy Mayor Shouris, thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on again, Brian. Good to be with you.
And there is a bit of a question of who should be in charge with the mayor away under city law, the line of succession, if a mayor actually has to leave office or were to die. Has the public advocate taking over temporarily, currently that's Letitia James, can the mayor just appoint you over her as being in charge when he's away?
Well, I think what the charter does is it makes provision if the mayor is out of town for an extended period, what happens after that, or if he's incapacitated in some other way. This is just a vacation, and when mayors from time immemorial have gone on vacation, they usually leave somebody in their shop to manage the day-to-day affairs. That's what I'll be doing over the next few days.
All right. The first 6 months, through a progressive lens, do you and the mayor keep a list of the biggest ways you think you've brought that change so far? Because you both so consistently articulate those values as being at the root of your administration.
We do, Brian. And you know, look, we start off with the commitments the mayor made during the campaign, and we track actually how we're doing on each one of those. And I think New Yorkers have come to realize that those commitments are ones that he plans to live up to and is, in fact, making a lot of progress on. The last 6 months, we've watched a movement on everything from universal pre-K and Muni IDs to paid sick leave and affordable housing. These are the ending of the Stop and Frisk program. These are all programs that were at the heart of an agenda that was based on trying to deal with the problems of inequality in New York City.
Someone told us the biggest accomplishment in the administration's own eyes is actually the labor contracts with the teachers union in DC 37. Would you put it that way?
Well, I wouldn't say it's the biggest. All of these, I think, are important to people in different ways. But look, one of the things that the mayor's always been clear on is that it's important to demonstrate a competent government and one that can manage its own affairs so that it can go ahead and execute on the much broader agenda that we have. One of the things that we were handed when we came in was, for the first time in the city's history, the entire city workforce didn't have any labor contracts and hadn't had them for years, actually. Over the last first 6 months, the administration, we nailed down about two-thirds of the workforce's contracts. We're working on the rest, and we're able not only to treat the workers fairly and, you know, do it in a respectful way, but also to do it in a way that was fiscally responsible so that, you know, the out-year budget gaps the city's facing now are the smallest it's seen in a generation. And as a percentage of our budget, we feel we've actually hit the nail on the head when it comes to a financially prudent way of dealing with one of the biggest things left on our plate from the prior administration.
You know, with the Long Island Railroad contract talks coming so close to a strike, and if people don't realize it, that's not the city, that's the MTA, which is separate. I wondered all week why they didn't go for your model of saving money on health care costs, which I thought was creative. Rather than ask the workers to pay part of their premiums per se, you agreed that they need to cut costs by a certain number of dollars, over $1 billion for the teachers, for example, but then they could do it however they want, tighter HMO rules, cost incentives, premiums if they choose. Do you think the railroad couldn't use that model for some reason and instead just insisted on old-fashioned premium contributions?
Well, I can't speak for how the MTA's contracts are structured, but what I can tell you is part of the whole idea of our labor strategy was to see if we could put labor and management on the same side when it came to health care costs. It's not in anybody's interest, workers' interest, taxpayers' interest, to be spending more on health care than we need to spend. And while obviously we want to make sure people get the benefits they need and deserve, there's no reason to spend more money on it than we have to. And after years of kind of, you know, hectoring each other from through bullhorns, when we were able to sit down together at the same table and say, look, let's see if we can do something that's in everybody's interest, it created a lot of resource that was available to help fund a labor contract. So you know, it's not something that's unique to big organizations. Lots of companies around the country have figured out ways to reduce the spending they have on healthcare. The city was way behind the curve on that. By developing a partnership with organized labor, we were able to get ourselves into the position where we could create those savings, and I think both sides benefited.
First Deputy Mayor Anthony Shores with us, in charge for the next 9 days as Mayor de Blasio heads off to Italy. Our Advocates Report Card series this week was not exhaustive. We took four major issues: the environment, crime and the police, jobs, and housing. And on the environment, here's a clip of our guest, Marcia Bistrin, head of the New York League of Conservation Voters, who said Mayor de Blasio is an environmental progressive, but he hasn't yet owned the issue. Listen.
What Mayor de Blasio hasn't done yet, and we hope he will, is he hasn't taken ownership of this issue yet, made it his own. And it's a real opportunity because he could infuse it with the equity issues that really drive his agenda. And I think the main thing we're looking for is he has yet to appoint a head of the long-term Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability, which was really the focal point for the Bloomberg administration's sustainability agenda. So we're looking for him to hire for that position and to really redefine it so it's his.
Marcia Bistrin from the League of Conservation Voters. She also said the mayor is yet to give a definitive environmental address, even one. So anything you'd say in response to Marcia?
Well, look, I think it's fair to say that we've actually made a good deal of progress when it comes to this agenda, but we have a ways to go. We've actually done something the prior administration didn't and created an Office of Resiliency and that was specifically devoted to some of these kinds of questions and appointed a new team to lead that. We've also begun the process that Marcia is referring to of learning to leverage environmental issues with the equity agenda. If you think about something the mayor did just yesterday. He was out at some homes that are being rebuilt as part of the Sandy program, and which was great for the people who were finally, after years, seeing progress on repairs. But what was also great was there were workers there who come from that community who are involved now in the reconstruction of homes. And that's beginning to leverage spending on infrastructure and resiliency programs to create economic development and jobs. And we actually have appointed a team that's devoted to exactly that, to job creation associated with environmental sustainability. So the leveraging point, I think, is a good one, and it's one we very much embrace. It's also, I think, to be fair on this, while there were lots of areas that Mayor de Blasio and his predecessor may have not seen eye to eye on, there were a couple of areas where I actually think we'd say Mayor Bloomberg made some real progress, public health for one, and the other was on sustainability. So it's not as if in this case, although we will probably be putting an equity lens on the whole issue of sustainability, but it's not an area where we dramatically disagree with the priorities set by the prior administration. And so I don't expect to see as dramatic a change in direction here as I might in some other areas, but I think the mayor's imprint is already starting to be known. You can just ask the workers yesterday who said they're finally getting a chance to get some economic opportunity by building the kind of resiliency we need.
And on something that could potentially happen, here's a caller to that sustainability show who raised a specific environmental initiative that some New Yorkers would like to see. Listen.
There's a bill in the city council for a 10-cent fee on disposable bags, plastic bags and paper bags. It's a huge amount of litter. It costs the money to dispose of and clean up the litter. A fee on bags in Washington, D.C., reduced bag use by 75% within a matter of months. It's in the council's court right now, but if the mayor said he'd sign it, that would send a huge signal, and it'd be great for the environment of New York.
So to the caller's point, Deputy Mayor, can you tell us if the mayor would sign a plastic shopping bag ban or fee if city council were to pass one?
Look, we're looking very closely at it, Brian. It is something with the direction of which we're very supportive of. The Sanitation Commissioner, Catherine Garcia, and I have had a series of extended conversations about how we can reduce the amount of waste flow through our system and putting small charges like that that then can be used by stores or others to reduce waste flow further. That's just the kind of direction we'd want to go in. So the specifics of the bill we're still looking at, but the concept of trying to reduce waste, the waste stream, I think is a good one. It's worked in other cities. We know it has, and it's just the kind of program we'd want to be looking at closely here in New York.
All right. Day two of our series had to do with crime and the police. Advocate Manifa Bendeli was glad the administration decided not to contest the lawsuit, declaring stop and frisk, Bloomberg-style, unconstitutional, the Floyd case. But she gave you an incomplete because of a next step in that process that she said was yet to be taken. Listen.
But we still have a long way to go. We're really just at the beginning. And the most important piece, one of the most important pieces of our campaign, was the Floyd versus New York City lawsuit, where a judge ruled that there'd be a joint remedy process that would take place where community and the city and the police would sit down and map out a new era. That hasn't happened yet.
Are you familiar with the consultation she refers to, and are there plans?
Yeah, we are in a constant dialogue, actually, with communities about how to make communities safer. And I think, Brian, the record on crime in general has been strong both ways. In other words, the commissioner that we've appointed, Bill Bratton, has made clear from the beginning that strong policing depends on strong community relations. And while at the same time that we've been able to keep crime down to historic lows, the murder rate is lower than it was last year, the overall crime rate is down 3% from where it was last year, we've made a lot of progress on crime. We have farther to go, for sure, because, you know, clearly one is too many. But we've been able to do it in a way that I think is responsive and responsible. The first thing Bill Bratton, I think, said when we swore him in was, you don't enforce the law by breaking the law. And so when it came to stop and frisk, as was mentioned, we settled the case and have moved on. When it came to the Central Park 5 case, we brought justice to people who hadn't seen it for too many years. We're actively engaged in communities all over New York. I think you saw, may have noticed, that a week or two ago we announced a very extensive plan to deal with crime and public housing programs all over the city where there's been an unfortunate concentration of it. Many of those programs are specifically built on engagement with resident associations and housing authority developments, because we understand that often the people who know best how to fight crime are the people who live in the communities. So I think we're moving in that direction. I don't think there's ever enough that can be done on community engagement, but it is the bulwark of where the mayor and the police commissioner believe the future of crime reduction lies.
Another issue that burst on the scene this week regarding law enforcement was the City Health Department report that the New York Times obtained, detailing 129 cases of corrections officer use of force at Rikers Island last year, mostly on mentally ill inmates, many of the incidents apparently involving excessive use of force. Now, these took place before you and the mayor came into office. But have you seen the report, and are you doing something with the corrections department at Rikers Island in response?
Well, look, we were, you know, obviously very disturbed about the history of what's been going on at Rikers for years. It's part of the reason we appointed Joe Pont as commissioner, who's a sort of known national reformer on issues of reduction of excessive use of force in prisons and jails. We've actually been redesigning whole aspects of Rikers. In the budget we did last just a few weeks ago, we announced a $32 million program specifically to deal with the most violent inmates on the island and those who had mental health, mental illness issues, and which we're doing in partnership with the City Health Department, hiring in some cases dozens and in other cases hundreds of new officers. So, and that included additional training for those officers and additional management structures that we'll be putting in place. So I think we're very much committed to addressing the issues that the Times, I thought, did a great job in highlighting. It's an unacceptable position there. We've got to make Rikers Island safe for the inmates who are there and frankly, for the officers and health staff that's there as well. By some estimates, as many as 40% of the people on Rikers Island have varying levels of mental illness and mental health challenges. And so we've got to have a very different and much more sophisticated approach to doing that. And in the largest context, the mayor appointed an interagency group to specifically deal with the issues of mental illness and mental health in the entire criminal justice system, right from arrests on the street all the way through to how folks are handled after they leave prison. And we expect to have something fairly substantial to say on that that will create a national model within the next few months.
Huh. Look forward to that. One other public safety thing. Our newsroom is covering the project to upgrade the 911 call system with its dangerous holes, and which I think you have delegated to three city agencies for review. That's been a couple of months. Anything to report?
We said we'd have our first look at there's a couple of pieces at the 911 system we're looking at. One had to do with the technology of the system, and we hope to have something to say about that on the schedule we announced within the next couple of weeks. There's a series of larger questions about the way the flow of the calls works and whether the staff and training is appropriate to make sure that we're doing the best job we possibly can. I mean, remember, they're handling approximately 11 million calls a year on that system, so the vast, vast majority of them are handled extremely well as anywhere in the world. But again, this is an area where we have to have zero tolerance for error, because the consequences are too great. So we're going to be driving to see if there are any further improvements we can make. That larger study we expect to have in hand by the end of the year and perhaps sooner. First piece will be the technology, a couple of weeks, and then we'll be looking at the system more comprehensively.
First Deputy Mayor Anthony Shores, my guest on WNYC. He's going to be the acting mayor from, when is that flight? Tonight, when Mayor de Blasio and family?
Scheduled to leave tonight, that's right.
You've got your first minute logged in that you're actually going to be in charge of the city?
Try not to think of it that way, Brian. The truth is mayors do seem to find ways to communicate wherever they are. Apparently phones, Blackberries, texts, and emails work whatever continent he's on. So I expect we'll be in pretty regular contact no matter where he is.
All right. One final topic from the series that we did with advocates assessing the Bloomberg administration on progressive values at 6 months was affordable housing. And the thing that got the most calls was the plan to use density to create more units in more places. For example, this caller from Brooklyn was not happy about dense high-rises that he says are planned for Carroll Gardens.
I feel that we've been conned, that it's words are cheap, and again, the Carroll Gardens F-stop is already very crowded. And look, I people want to live here because it's a nice neighborhood, but the problem is some of these developments are going to change that from being a nice neighborhood.
So, Deputy Mayor, how are you walking that line, and is it proving in the early stages to be more complicated than you might have thought it would be between planning for more density in pursuit of affordable housing and not destroying the character of neighborhoods who don't want to join high-rise nation?
Well, look, it is a complicated issue, Brian, for sure. A couple of principles guide our thinking on this. First, there is an obvious and extraordinary housing crisis in New York. There are far too few units that are affordable to people and way too many people who are paying more than they should for housing in New York. I don't think there's a New Yorker I know that doesn't feel there's a challenge when it comes to housing. And so we have a huge moral obligation to deal with some of that. At the same time, the second principle is we have a commitment to being responsible and responsive to communities and engaging them in the planning process. And we are in the major areas where we've targeted for increased housing opportunities, we've made very clear there's going to be pretty close engagement with the community on that and a kind of a bottom-up planning process, not some imposed massive rezonings from afar. I think you can also see, though, in every project that was on the table when we came in, we have pushed hard to move those projects in the right direction, whether it's in Atlantic Yards, whether it's in the Domino Sugar site, whether it's up in Sugar Hill in Harlem, or the related companies' development at the Hudson Yards. In every one of those, we've pushed hard to increase the amount of affordable housing, to make it affordable for longer periods of time, so that we have a shot at dealing with the demand that we have. We laid out a 200,000 unit program of expansion and protection of affordable housing in New York on top of the market rate development that will no doubt happen. We need to grow the city, of course, but we need to make the city affordable for the people who live here. So, sure, there will be trade-offs, and we recognize that, and we expect New Yorkers will make their voices heard when it comes to the impact on their communities. But we also know that unless we address this affordable housing crisis, way too many New Yorkers will be either paying too much or, worst of all, driven out of their ability to stay in the neighborhoods they love. So we have to move forward on both fronts, engaging with communities and building the low-income housing that we need.
All right. We're just about out of time. We've been getting in some things from people on what they would do if they were mayor for a week in the middle of the summer. Someone said, replace water fountains with iced tea. Someone else said, instantly clean up the Gowanus to make it swimmable. And someone said, if you can cancel schools for snow in the summer, can you cancel work for sunshine? Schools for snow in the winter. Can you cancel work for sunshine in the summer?
These are all excellent ideas, Brian. I will be adding them to my to-do list immediately as we go forward. But suffice it to say, I have plenty to keep me busy over the next week or so. So I'm going to try and see if I can advance some of the other things we've been talking about. But a little iced tea from the water fountain sounds like a very sweet idea.
Are you going to marry people?
I think people can probably hold off on their marriages for a week until the mayor gets back.
All right. And Mayor de Blasio, if you're listening, I heard a rumor that he's going to redecorate Gracie Mansion, but I don't know if it's true. First Deputy Mayor Anthony Shores, thank you very much for joining us. Good luck over the next 9 days.
All right. Take care, Brian. Thanks very much.